the world, Michael Bloomberg, sponsored by the Heart Institute of Staten Island. Don't let your heart skip a beat.
And here we go again. Good morning, everybody. Welcome aboard our Friday edition of the John Gambling Show. Yes, indeed, with Mayor Michael Bloomberg. Mr. Mayor, good morning. You always like to take credit for the good weather. What are you going to do for me today?
This is for our kids. Keep in mind, there's no school this week, and the kids can go out without cutting school and play in the snow.
No, you know, you're such a good guy.
And that's why we've done this. As a matter of fact, John, I know you know this, but the Parks Department is providing sleds and music and hot chocolate at five parks, one in each borough. And you're going to say, which ones? Well, you know, it's Cortona Park in the Bronx, Prospect Park in Brooklyn, specifically Prospect Park West at 9th Street. Then there's Riverside Park in Manhattan at 103rd Street. And Juniper Valley Park in Queens and Cloves Lake Park in Staten Island. And that's what we're doing this.
That is fantastic. I'm not sure I can remember this ever being done before.
Bring a snowstorm just for the kids?
Well, no. But provide the sleds and the hot chocolate to go sleigh riding.
Well, we do that actually occasionally.
Do you?
But here, the timing is perfect if you think about it. We did it on a week when the kids were out of school.
Perfect.
We did it so that we'll have the whole weekend to clean up the mess. If people take Friday off, it's not the world's worst thing. Some people take Fridays off, and everybody is enjoying this the snow. All kidding aside, the police department has reported, and the fire department as well, has reported accidents, but so far no fatalities, although there was a Department of Transportation worker injured earlier today when his truck was struck in an accident after driving over an ice patch. I was just about to call him when the radio started, but he's in the hospital, but I'll talk to him later on.
Yeah, and of course the airports are a mess.
Airports are a mess. You know, it's really hard to fly in and out. What we do have is, and Commissioner Daugherty has 2,000 sanitation workers on duty. They're working 12-hour shifts to provide round-the-clock coverage. And New York's strongest, as we call them, they worked through the night. One of the things here is we had plenty of warning, so we started plowing the instant we could, and we've got something like 2,200 pieces of equipment out plowing the streets, including all 365 of the salt spreaders and 26 plows from the Department of Transportation. And in case you're wondering, John, how much salt we have on hand.
Yeah, I was worried about it.
121,416 tons.
In some places, I was reading in the newspaper earlier this week in the West, in the Midwest, where they've had such a terrible winter and all the snow, that they're out of salt. So maybe you could cut a deal and leverage this.
Well, first we want to make sure that we have enough. But seriously, people should. We're not going to pick up, obviously, recycling stuff or garbage today, but you should still put it out because we will try to over the weekend. We're going to work tomorrow and Sunday and try to catch back up. So put out your garbage or recycling in the normal ways. Alternate side of the street parking obviously canceled for today. Just to show you how well people use 311, as of 9:45, just when I came downstairs, we had 47,500 calls.
That's a phenomenal system.
Yeah, I mean, this was like 9:45, and we normally get 40,000 in an entire day on a Friday. So, but seriously, there's 6 to 9 inches of snow. It'll change over this afternoon to sleet, but it's still going to be a mess. The snow, the changeover is to more like sleet than a warm rain that's going to melt everything. And, you know, just be careful going home. Allow some extra time. There's nothing that's going to make it any easier. Just don't make it any worse. Don't get into any accidents. And, you know, say, okay. Fortunately, it hasn't happened very many times this year.
And I understand, too, that it is the responsibility of businesses and homeowners to keep the sidewalks.
That is correct. You have to shovel in front of your own building. And this morning, I woke up at 3 this morning, and I got up and I heard the noise of somebody shoveling. So I went and looked out the window, and I saw the streets were covered, even at 3 in the morning, and said, oh, well, better set the alarm for a little earlier. And on the subway down this morning, you know, everybody was sort of sanguine about it. It wasn't it's sort of a little bit of a dress-down day. I saw more people not wearing suits, getting off at these stations than normal.
Yeah, in fact, I even got an email from my son who lives in New York City, and he said he was off to work this morning with his boots on. So he was walk in the snow. Well, nice walk in the snow.
It is nice, and as long as you put it in perspective, we've had so little snow this year. It is, I don't mean to understate the inconvenience, but, you know, we've been lucky so far this year.
Absolutely. Let me take a break right here, Mr. Mayor, and then we'll get back to some questions of substance, hopefully. And
you mean snow's not substance?
Well, no, it's definitely substance. We'll talk politics in the city and you and what's going on for us. But we've got our ladies waiting to tell us about the weather, also the traffic as well this morning at 77 WABC. WABC. We continue with Mayor Michael Bloomberg. Mr. Mayor, this is an adjunct story almost to the snow story, because when we get snow like this, people wonder, where does it go? The city, interestingly, used to dump it in the rivers, doesn't do that anymore. You melt most of it now, don't
that
you?
That is correct. We have these big snow melters. You dump the snow in, water comes out. But the water that comes out, remember, has all the salt in it that we put on the road. So even that water we want to put into the sewer system and run it through the sewage treatment plants before you put the water that's left back into the rivers and the ocean.
That's exactly my question, because I read this week, I was very pleased to read that the city and you are going to push forward making it so that the stormwater, now this isn't a very sexy story, but the stormwater actually doesn't overflow the treatment plants and go into the rivers.
The way the system was designed 100 years ago or something is that the water that goes off our streets into the sewers that you see at the corner goes through the same sewage system treatment that the water that comes from your apartment or your house. And the only exception is if there is an enormous amount of water, like a big rainstorm, and the sewage system can't handle all of it, the sewage system gives preference to the stuff coming from your house or apartment and takes the street water and lets it bypass the treatment plant and go straight into the rivers and the ocean and the bay. And that's not good, but that's the only practical thing you can do now. Now, we're trying to rebuild the system, which is obviously a number of decades and billions of dollars project, so that it can handle the runoff from the streets even when there's a downpour. Snow is, interestingly enough, not a big problem, because the snow melts slowly, and so the amount of water at any one time going into the sewer system is very manageable. It's in the summer when you have a thunderstorm. We have this enormous quantity of water come down very quickly. Then the sewage system can't handle it. The water bypasses the sewage system, goes into the river, and that's not good. And
you know,
we're trying to do something about it.
I have to give you kudos now, because I have been yelling for years. I've grown up on Long Island Sound, and when I was a boy in the 60s, it was disgusting. I mean, what was going into Long Island Sound from the treatment plants in New York, Long Island, Connecticut as well. And for all of these almost 50 years, politicians have been talking about the problem, doing study after study.
Well, you don't need to say, there's two things.
And the problem is, it costs so much money, nobody wants to do anything.
Right. Well, there's two things to do here, and a government always forgets about looking at both things. One is to do something about the problem. Another one is to ameliorate the problem. So that's, if you go back to Plan YC, greening the roofs of buildings. One of the advantages is that it reduces the amount of energy you need to heat or to cool the building in the winter or the summer, because it acts as great insulation. That's good because we generate a lot less pollutants, because we have to generate less electricity. The other thing it does is it stores water. It keeps the water from running off, and it gets absorbed by the dirt and sand or whatever is on your roof, and so it never makes it into the sewer system. Now, keep in mind, the thing that's really bad here is if the sewer runoff from the streets and your apartment/house is so much, even the untreated sewage from your house can bypass the system and go in. And then
exactly.
That's why sometimes in the summer we close the beaches, because the bacteria count in the water is so high for a few days after that. But we're trying to reduce the amount of water that goes into the sewer system, get toilets that use less water to flush. That will help. And at the same time, look at the other side, if you will, the demand side or the supply side, depending on how you want to define it, and say, okay, that system itself has to be able to handle more. The trouble, as you pointed out, is it's not sexy. And if I've say, you know, let's
and expensive. It's not sexy.
It's expensive. And elected officials have to go and answer, why did you cut back the library hours? Why did you cut back a development of a park? Why did you cut back aid to education? This, that, or the other thing. When and you say, well, we did it so that we could put some money into the sewer system. And the answer is, huh?
Yeah.
I'm not going to vote for you, buddy.
Exactly.
I'm not going to give you any campaign donations. And so you can understand maybe why politicians are unwilling to do that. I was in Washington yesterday and talked about infrastructure with Adrian Fenty, who's the mayor of Washington, and a really good guy who is very well liked down there and is doing a spectacular job. And
yeah, we've had him on the show here.
Yeah,
you
absolutely.
Him up
and I went on the local radio show, WAMU, I think it is, down in Washington with him, and this time as his guest, and he was my guest, or your guest, as up here. But one of the things we talked about was infrastructure, and somebody, the host said, a guy named Kojo, a nice guy from Guyana, I think, and he said, oh, you know, this sounds like this $1 trillion that's estimated we have to spend on infrastructure in this country is an enormous amount of money. And I said, we spend it already. We're just not spending it intelligently. So we build a bridge to nowhere, or we build something that's sexy because there's ribbon cutting of opportunities and photo opportunities for politicians. What we need are leaders, and I think that Fenty is one of those leaders, to explain to the public, you know, I know it'd be nice to do something that looks good, but we got to do something that long term we need. And Fenty's the kind of guy who will stand up, take the political heat to do that. And I got a lot of admiration for this guy. He says, oh, he's patterning himself after us. And I said to the host, said, isn't he doing that? And I said, actually, I was down here to learn from them. There's a nice article in The Economist about electronic government and bringing services. And we've done an enormous amount, as you know. There's 311. There's our new mayor's management report online and all this data. But Fenty's actually done a lot of things. And the article did talk about him in The Economist, of the things he's done in Washington.
All right. You're also down talking to the World Bank this week, too.
Yeah, they have a division that works on cities. And so I was invited down to talk about what we're doing in New York City to make the city better and whether any of those things could be useful elsewhere. And actually, they were very instrumental in helping us develop our conditional cash transfer system where, you know, we raised $50 million in private money and we're trying to incent poor people to do what's right in the same ways we incent rich people with government tax breaks and programs and whatever, and use capitalism, if you will, to get people to do what we all think is in the public's interest.
Has that started, that program?
It has started. There's 5,000 people signed up. My recollection is 2,500 get grants, 2,500 are control groups so we can study what would have happened, you know, if they didn't get the grants. There's a lot of science involved. We've got a very good firm doing the analysis so we can really get some hard data as to whether it works. And after my administration's over, it'll be up to the next administration. But if it does work, and we can show that it works and prove it, then they should incorporate that into the regular city budget of how we attack poverty and try to help people. At the moment, we're doing it with private money because it is so untried. But the World Bank has been the big proponent of it, and it's been used in Brazil, Mexico, about 15 countries very successfully.
Do you think that government, and we don't have a lot of time here because we have to go to the break on the half hour, but do you think that government can learn from the way you are running this city, which is very businesslike, in your explanation of that program right there and how you're studying it and you're doing it, and to see if it works,
well,
to make sure that it does what you want it to do?
I think we can all learn from each other, and in all fairness, it's very flattering when people say New York is well run, but let me tell you, there are other cities as well. Fenty is doing a great job in Washington. Richie Daley, I've always thought, Manny Diaz, Shirley Franklin, Villagrosa, Tom Menino in Boston, the mayor of Seattle is a really classy guy making some big differences out there. The mayor of Denver I've got to know. You know, a number of these mayors really are trying to do things differently. It's at the city level where the big changes are. There are some governors that are trying. I'm going to meet with Rendell and Schwarzenegger this weekend, beginning of the week, to talk about infrastructure. They're very aggressive. Governor Spitzer's trying to do some things. So, you know, but it's the federal level where they don't do anything.
You're absolutely right. Maybe we'll get into that a little bit in the next half hour. Mr. Mayor, hang on. Let's take our half-hour break. Also, don't forget, if you'd like to ask the mayor a question, we have the opportunity for you at 1-800-848-WABC, 1-800-848-WABC, if you want to get in the line right there. Right here, let's go to the half-hour break and get you some information. WABC. John Gambling with you here at 77 WABC, Friday get-together with Mayor Michael Bloomberg. I thought the OTB thing was done.
It's a long process to shut something down. There are labor requirements of notification. We have leases that run out. Right now, we still are slightly cash positive. We really don't turn negative till about the beginning of June, which is why we set that as the date, because we're just not going to subsidize OTB. But we will, at the end of this month and another week, shut down two of the parlors because the leases are up for renewal, and I don't want to sign a new lease. Now, it's possible that the state will come and stop this craziness. You know, OTB, John, was originally started to raise money for the city and the state. Somehow or other, it got converted to being a subsidy for the racing industry over the past decade or so.
And the state as well.
So, you know, they say, oh, it's really funny. They say, oh, it's giving the city $17, $20 million a year. Yeah, it is, but we have to put $17 or $20 million in soon more than that in to keep it going. So, you know, they say they're giving us something, and in fact, net, we are losing. And this city just doesn't have the money to go subsidize a bookie operation.
But what I read is that the state still wants OTB to be part of this new NYRA deal.
Well, the state is now all of a sudden realizing that we still generate $100, $120 million in profit. The question is, where does it go? And if we shut it down, they won't have that money. And if they feel they have to subsidize the racing industry, which is not my decision, it may very well be that that's a good thing for the state to do. I don't, you know, don't want to get involved in that pony, if you will.
But don't want to ride that horse.
But, you know, the issue is New York City residents are generating that $120 million, and we're not getting anything out of it. And what's really frustrating is they went ahead and did a deal. Doesn't make a lot of sense to me, but that's up to them. I mean, dealing with NYRA, it's bankrupt, and some of their senior people were convicted of fraud, and it's nonprofit in the world where I think this is the classic kind of government function that you should farm out to a profit-oriented organization. But they made the deal with them. But they said, oh, we couldn't deal with OTB at the same time. What do you mean you couldn't? This is a problem that's been growing for years. It isn't like they didn't know it was coming. Even for the last 2 years or so, I've been screaming about this. So they had plenty of time. The frustration that we have is that they didn't do anything. Now, I suppose they still have time to do it, to do something about it. I think it is a shame that the only way as Albany ever works is when they have to a crisis facing them. And I just want to make sure that the ultimate for us would be that OTB generates money for the city and for the state, and if the state decides to use some of it to subsidize the racing industry, that's them. But my concern is that we get some money. Having said that, the worst-case scenario is that we have to run this thing and subsidize it, and that we're not going to do. And, you know, there are some of the state officials say, well, you don't have the right to close it down, and I think we could litigate that in court, and we actually might win. But regardless, the one thing's for sure, we don't have the obligation to subsidize it. And so if we just stop subsidizing it, it's going to stop. And I'm not going to let it go on and just, you know, be one of these things that the state keeps milking the city for it, and we get you know, the short end of the stick. This is not fair. We have requirements for schools and teacher salaries and police salaries and fire and sanitation, corrections, you know, all the different things the city has to do. And we need money like everybody else to do it. And OTB was designed to help pay for these kinds of things, and instead it's being used for something that I wasn't in government when they sold this bill of goods to the public as the reason for it. But I guarantee you, they didn't say, we're going to run this bookie operation to subsidize an upstate industry.
I know that you like to focus on things that have to do with New York City, but everything is connected in this world, and especially Albany and New York City. Did you happen to see the story in the New York Sun this morning about the size of the staff of the Assembly and the Senate? It outpaces every other state by 500. It's just amazing.
Let me be diplomatic and say, since we need a lot of help from the Senate and the Assembly, I will let them worry about their internal housekeeping matters. What I should do is make sure the public is satisfied that the city is well run. And I can tell you, in our Albany office, we have 8 people from the mayor's office, and includes Department of Education and HHC and NYCHA and everything. They used to have separate offices up there. One of the things we've done is we've combined it all. We have made it an open plan. I was in our Washington office yesterday. I took the subway from the radio station to our office in Washington, D.C. with the Mayor Fenty. And we cut the size of the office in half, gave up half the space, which cut the rent in half, and did an open plan, and we have 8 people there, and we are much more efficient than ever before. We reduced the rent, actually, I think it went from something like $23,000 to $10,000, as I remember, a month. You know, we have to have legislative offices in Albany and in D.C. because we work the legislators to try to get them to pass legislation, which is in the city's interest. But the city is doing it with fewer people and better functionality, I think, than ever before. And that's my responsibility, not to worry about the size of the state or the the state senate, the state assembly office.
I think a lot of people, including yourself, were surprised after the New York State primary to see the counting of votes in various
no,
places.
No, I wasn't.
No votes for Obama. I mean, I'm thinking ahead now, not only to November for the presidential and the statewide races, but the New York City. The voting system in New York seems to be completely messed up.
There's two things here. One is, what happened was the reporting to the press at the end of the day of voting was clearly not accurate. The reporting of the actual numbers later on, where you do have some checks and balances of a police officer there and paid poll workers to double check, that probably was a lot more accurate. A cynic would say, wait a second, people read the numbers that they get in the paper. They don't look at the vote tallies down the road.
Right.
And elsewhere, they make decisions based on how well a candidate did here. So you really are committing, you're creating, I don't know if fraud's the right word, but creating a problem, and you're misleading everybody, and it should not happen. I think the real problem, however, is the Board of Elections is this organization. It's one of the last things that is pure patronage. The Republicans get half the votes. The Democrats get half the votes. They only pick people based on party affiliation and loyalty to the party. They never look at competency. And what makes America's democracy so strong is the confidence that people have in the integrity of the elections. And if we start losing that confidence, and they have every reason to worry about it here, then you see, the developing world, they lose confidence in the electoral process, and you have tragic consequences like you saw in Kenya. I don't think it'll ever get to that here in the United States, but if we don't reform our election administration, it's not beyond the realm of possibility, and there's just no excuse for it.
And
it's the same thing at a federal level.
And the electronic voting things is still not straightened out, I don't think.
Well, this is the organization that has been working for years to try to pick voting machines, and they can't do it. This isn't rocket science stuff. it's just ordering voting machines, for goodness sakes.
You're absolutely right. MTA scheduled, I read today, that they've got some stats on efficiencies, delays, on time, off time, delays up over a third from a year ago. And then we got a price increase coming up, too.
Well, I have always defended the job that the MTA does, because on balance, I think they do a good job. You can always find fault. I'm sure they could do it more efficiently and better and this and that. But the subway system, and I'm not an expert on the bus system, but the subways I take every day, took it this morning, I can just tell you, it is so much better than when I came to this city in 1966. And it's safe, it's clean, it's on time, it's affordable, all of those things. And you're going to say, well, it's a little bit slower. Okay, sometimes, we're so spoiled. I think the system, that part of the system, system is working well. What's not working well is we're not making the investments that we need long term. Our mass transit system doesn't satisfy the needs of the region or of the city. There are lots of parts that are not don't have access to mass transit, so they drive. That creates pollution and ties up our streets and hurts our economy and that sort of thing. People want to make it safer. They want to have better signaling and more security and more this and more that, and nobody wants to pay for it. And, you know, I defended the governor and stood with him in terms of a fare increase because the transit workers want to get, you know, they have aspirations, they have families, and they've got to get, if we want to have good, hardworking transit workers, you're going to have to pay them. Now, that's not to say you couldn't make the management of the MTA better. Lee Sanders come in, and he's the chairman Hummerdinger is a smart guy. Everybody says, I know I'm casually, people say nothing but good things about this guy. They say he really is a quality guy. And they'll get their hands around it and make it better. And Calico and the people, Katie Lapp, people he had working for him, they made the system better. There's just, it's such an easy organization to take a shot at. I'm sort of more of a defender of them than most people.
All right.
And, you know, listen, I take it every day.
Very good. Hang on a second, Mr. Mayor. Let me take a break. We got crummy weather outside. Let's find out the very latest. 77 WABC. Couple of more minutes with Mayor Michael Bloomberg here on the Friday John Gambling Show. Glad you're aboard on a snowy day, Mr. Mayor. It's time for questions from the audience. Let's start with Ann in Queens. Ann, good morning. You've got Mayor Michael Bloomberg. Go.
Thank you. Thank you for this opportunity, Mayor. I was speaking to a school safety officer who told me that due to problems in some schools, the school police now function better under the New York City Police Department. To me, this is a positive improvement, and I'm hoping for another one.
What's your question, Annie?
My question is this. Regarding schools that ignore chancellor, state, and regents' regulations, for example, health, safety, altering school records, and financial mismanagement, where there's
get to the question.
And where are you reading this from, Ann?
Yeah, really,
okay.
Get to the question.
Is there an oversight office or a place where teachers can address problems?
Absolutely. Number one, they can go to the principal, the manager of their group, and that's the principal's job. There is a Department of Investigations person, an investigator assigned to the Department of Education, Mr. Condon. He is absolutely one of the most honest people in the whole world. He's just his credentials are unbelievable. And he works for Rose Gilhern, the Department of Investigations. And we have a whole procedure where anybody that thinks fraud is being committed can go. And every one of those things is investigated very carefully. And look, we have 120,000 people that work for the Department of Education. I can't tell you every one of them always follows every rule. But I think generally they do. They do a great job. And you can see it in the results. The graduation rates continue to go up. The math scores keep going up. The reading scores, somebody said to me yesterday, you know, reading scores haven't gone up. That's not true. Reading scores have gone up dramatically. The difference is this year, for the first year, No Child Left Behind requires us to count in the reading scores all of the students, including those who just joined our school system and don't speak English anymore. So needless to say, they don't do very well on an English test. Hopefully by the time they leave school, they will be able to do that. But that sort of drags down the average. But even in reading, the school system is making amazing gains. The teachers who work for the school system, 80,000 of them, you know, they are changing the world. And the principals, roughly 1,500 of them, the legacy of these people will be for decades, go on for decades of just taking generations of our kids and giving them the skills for the great American
dream.
Let
us hope that they continue for the decades to come. Tom and Poughkeepsie, you're next. You've got the ear of Mayor Michael Bloomberg. We don't have a lot of time. Right to the question, please.
My question is about affordable housing. People commute from Poughkeepsie because they can't afford to live in the city or near it. What are you going to do about affordable housing?
Well, we're building, rehabbing. I've committed to do 165,000 units of affordable housing. That will hold 500,000 people. That's more people than live in Atlanta, Georgia. So we're building an awful lot of affordable housing, and the private sector is building a lot of housing at every economic level. The problem is a problem of success because crime is down and the schools are better, as we just talked about. People aren't leaving the city who used to leave before, and people who never considered living here are now moving here. And so no matter how fast we build, we're going to have more and more of this problem. The better the city gets, the more we're going to have the problem of people not being able to afford to find housing. And we also have another problem, and that is there's not a lot of vacant land to build affordable housing on. You know, if you go to other cities in the state and elsewhere in this country, they have vacant land, they have deserted buildings. We don't have very much of that because of the success we've had in the last half a dozen years and even before that. And not enough affordable housing and too much traffic, stressed infrastructure. Those are problems of success. Not that they're very important, aren't very important, and we really are working on it. Our whole housing plan is the biggest housing plan this nation has ever seen.
All right, let me ask you this question. On affordable housing that's built by the city, is that managed in the commercial market or is the managed in the government market?
There's a number of different kinds of housing, John. There's NYCHA Housing, New York City Housing Authority. That's managed by NYCHA, which is responsible to the city. But then the affordable housing tends to be subsidies and done in the private sector, and we're out of time, I hear.
We are indeed, Mr. Mayor.
Drive
put your snowshoes
please.
On. And
drive carefully.
Yeah, don't slip. We'll talk to you next Friday.
Looking
Thank you very
it.
Much. All right, bye-bye. Coming up, Chris Wallace.